said. Don't you like July?
I like July a lot, Clara said.
He thinks you're mad at him, Betsy said.
Why would he care? Clara said with a little smile.
He's got the two of you to pamper him. You're both nicer than I've ever been.
We want you to like him, Betsy said.
She was the more direct of the two.
I told you I like him.
I know people ain't smart and often love those who don't care for them. Up to a point, I'm tolerant of that. Then past a point, I'm not tolerant of it. I think it's a sickness to grieve too much for those who never cared a fig for you.
Both of the girls were silent for a time.
You remember that, Clara said. Do your best. If you happen to love a fool, you'll have my sympathy. Some folks will preach that it's a woman's duty never to quit, once you make a bond with a man. I say that's folly. A bond has to work two ways. If a man don't hold up his end, there comes time to quit. She sat down at the table and faced the girls. July was outside, well out of hearing. July don't want to face up to the fact that his wife never loved him.
She ought to have loved him, Sally said.
Ought don't count for as much as a gnat when you're talking about love, Clara said.
She didn't. You've seen her. She didn't even care for Martin.
We've already given July and Martin more love than that poor woman ever gave them.
I don't say that to condemn her. I know she had her troubles, and I doubt she was often in her right mind.
I'm sorry she had no more control of herself to run off from her husband and child and get killed.
She stopped to let the girls work on the various questions a little. It interested her which they would pick as the main point.
We want July to stay, Betsy said finally. You'll make him run off, being so stern. Then he'll get butchered up, too.
You think I'm that bad? Clara asked with a smile.
You're pretty bad, Betsy said.
Clara laughed.
You'll be just as bad if you don't reform.
I got a right to my feelings, too, you know. We're doing a nice job of taking care of July Johnson. It just gripes me that he let himself be tromped on and can't even figure out that it wasn't right, and that he didn't like it.
Can't you just be patient? Sally said. You're patient with Daddy.
Daddy got his head kicked, Clara said. He can't help how he is.
Did he keep his bond? Betsy asked.
Yes, for 16 years, Clara said, although I never liked his drinking.
I wish he'd get well, Sally said. She had been her father's favorite and grieved over him the most.
Ain't he going to die? Betsy asked.
I fear he will, Clara said. She had been careful not to let that notion take hold of the girls, but she wondered if she was wrong. Bob wasn't getting better, and wasn't likely to.
Sally started to cry, and Clara put her arms around her.
Anyway, we have July, Betsy said.
If I don't run him off, Clara said.
You just better not, Betsy said, eyes flashing.
He might get bored and leave of his own accord, Clara volunteered.
How could he get bored? There's lots to do, Sally said.
Don't be so stern with him, Ma, Betsy pleaded. We don't want him to leave.
It won't hurt the man to learn a thing or two, Clara said. If he plans to stay here, he'd better start learning how to treat women.
He treats us fine, Sally pointed out.
You ain't women yet, Clara said.
I'm the only one around here, and he better spruce up if he wants to keep on my good side.
July soon returned to work, but his demeanor had not greatly improved. He had little humor in him and could not be teased successfully, which was an irritant to Clara. She had always loved to tease and considered it an irony of her life that she was often drawn to men who didn't recognize teasing, even when she was inflicting it on them.
Bob had never responded to teasing, or even noticed it, and her powers in that line had slowly rusted from lack of practice. Of course she teased the girls, but it was not the same as having a grown man to work on. She had often felt like pinching Bob for being so stolid. July was no better. In fact, he and Bob were cut from the same mold, a strong but unimaginative mold. When she came down from washing her face, she heard talk from the back and stopped dead on the stairs, for there was no doubt who was talking. The chord of memory that had been weakly struck by the sight of the horseman resounded through her suddenly like an organ note. No sound in the world could have made her happier, for she'd heard the voice of Augustus McCrae, a voice like no other. He sounded exactly as he always had. Hearing his voice so unexpectedly after 16 years caused her eyes to fill. The sound took the years away. She stood on the stairs in momentary agitation, uncertain for a second as to when it was, or where she was. So much did it remind her of other times when Augustus would show up unexpectedly, and she, in her little room over the store, would hear him talking to her parents. Only now he was talking to her girls. Clara regretted not changing blouses. Gus had always appreciated her appearance. She walked on down the stairs and looked out the kitchen window. Sure enough, Gus was standing there, in front of his horse, talking to Betsy and Sally. Woodrow Call sat beside him, still mounted, and beside Call, on a bay horse, was a young blonde woman wearing men's clothing. A good-looking boy on a brown mare was the last of the group. Clara noted that Gus had already charmed the girls. July Johnson would be lucky to get another bowl of soup out of them as long as Gus was around. She stood at the window a minute, studying him. To her, he seemed not much older. His hair had already turned white when he was young. He had always made her feel keen. Gus, his appetite for talk matched hers. She stood for a moment in the kitchen doorway, a smile on her lips. Just seeing him made her feel keen. She was in the shadows, and he had not seen her. Then she took a step or two, and Augustus looked around. Their eyes met, and he smiled.
"Well, pretty as ever," he said.
To the huge astonishment of her girls, Clara walked straight off the porch and into the stranger's arms. She had a look in her eyes that they had never seen. And she raised her face to the stranger and kissed him right on the mouth, an action so startling and so unexpected that both girls remembered the moment for the rest of their lives. Newt was so surprised that he scarcely knew where to look. When Clara kissed him, Lorena looked down. Nothing but despair in her heart. There the woman was. Gus loved her, and she herself was lost. She should have stayed in the tent and not come to see it, yet she had wanted to come. Now that she had, she would have given anything to be somewhere else, but of course it was too late. When she looked up again, she saw that Clara had stepped back a bit and was looking at Gus, her face shining with happiness. She had thin arms and large hands, Lorena noticed. Two men were walking up from the lots, having seen the crowd.
"Well, introduce your friends, Gus," Clara said. She had a hand on his arm and walked him over to the horses.
"Oh, you know Woodrow."
"How do you do?" Call said, feeling at a loss.
"This is Miss Lorena Wood,"
Augusta said, reaching up to help her dismount.
"She's come a far piece with us, all the way from Lonesome Dove, in fact. This young gentleman is Newt."
"Newt who?" Clara asked.
"Newt Dobbs," Augusta said after a pause.
"Hello, Miss Wood," Clara said. To Lorena's surprise, she seemed quite friendly, far more so than most women were to her.
"I don't know whether to envy you or pity you, Miss Wood," Clara said. "Riding all that way with Mr. McCrae, I mean. I know he's entertaining, but that much entertainment could break a person for life." Then Clara laughed, a happy laugh. She was amused that Augustus had seen fit to arrive with a woman, that she had stunned her girls by kissing him, and that Woodrow Call, a man she had always disliked and considered scarcely more interesting than a stump, had been able to think of nothing better to say to her after 16 years than, "How do you do?" It added up to a lively time in her book, and she felt she had been in Nebraska long enough to deserve a little liveliness. She saw that the young woman was very frightened of her. She had dismounted but kept her eyes cast down. July and Cholo walked up just at that time, July with a look of surprise on his face.
"Why, Sheriff Johnson," Augustus said. "I guess, as they say, it's a small world."
"Just to you, Gus. You've met everybody in it now, I'm sure," Clara said. She glanced at July, who so far hadn't spoken. He was watching her, and it struck her that it might be because she was still holding Gus's arm. It made Clara want to laugh again. In minutes, the arrival of Gus McCrae had mixed up everyone, just as it usually had in the past. It had always been a peculiarity of her friendship with Augustus. Nobody had ever been able to figure out whether she was in love with him or not. Her parents had puzzled over the question for years. It had replaced Bible arguments as their staple of conversation. Even when she had accepted Bob, Gus's presence in her life confused most people, for she had soon demonstrated that she had no intention of giving him up just because she was planning to marry. The situation had been made more the amusing by the fact that Bob himself worshipped Gus, and would probably have thought it odd that she had chosen him over Gus if he had been sharp enough to figure out that she could have had Gus if she'd wanted him. It had been one-sided adoration, though, for Gus considered Bob one of the dullest men alive, and often said so. "Why are you marrying that dullard?" he asked her often. "He suits me," she said. "Two racehorses like us would never get along. I'd want to be in the lead, and so would you." "I never thought you'd marry a man with nothing to say," he'd said. "Talk ain't everything," she said, words she had often remembered with Rue during years when Bob scarcely seemed to utter two words a month. Now Gus was back and had instantly captured her girls. That was clear. Betsy and Sally were fascinated, if embarrassed, that this white-haired man had ridden up and kissed their mother.
"Where's Robert?" Augustus asked, to be polite.
"Upstairs, sick," Clara said. "A horse kicked him in the head. It's a bad wound." For a second, remembering the silent man upstairs, she thought how unfair life was. Bob was slipping away, and yet that knowledge couldn't quell her happiness at the sight of Gus and his friends. It was a lovely summer day, too, a fine day for a social occasion. "You girls go catch 3 pullets," she said. "I imagine Miss Wood is tired of eating beefsteak. It's such a fair day, we might want to picnic a little later."
"Oh, Ma, let's do," Sally said. She loved picnics.
Clara would have liked a few words with Augustus alone, but that would have to wait until things settled down a little, she saw. Miss Wood mostly kept her eyes down and said nothing, but when she raised them, it was always to look at Gus. Clara took them into the kitchen and left them a moment, for she heard the baby cry.
"Now, see, all your worrying was for nothing," Augustus whispered to Lorena. "She's got a young child."
Lorena held her peace. The woman seemed kind. She had even offered her a bath, but she still felt frightened. What she wanted was to be on the trail again with Gus. Her mind kept looking ahead to when the visit would be over and she would have Gus alone again. Then she would feel less frightened. Clara soon came down, baby in her arms. "It's July's son," she said, handing the baby to Gus as if it were a package.
"Well, what do I want with it?" Augustus asked.
He had seldom held a baby in his arms and was somewhat discommoded. "Just hold him or give him to Miss Wood," Clara said. "I can't hold him and cook, too."
Call, July, and Cholo had walked off to the lots, for Call wanted to buy a few horses, and anyway didn't care to sit in the kitchen and try to make conversation. It amused Lorena that Gus had got stuck with the baby. Somehow it made things more relaxed that the woman would just hand him to Gus that way. She stopped feeling quite so nervous, and she watched the baby chew on his fat little fist.
"If this is Sheriff Johnson's child, whereabouts is his wife?" Augustus asked.
"Dead," Clara said. She stopped here with two buffalo hunters, had the child, and left. July showed up 2 weeks later, half dead from worry.
"So you adopted them both. You was always one to grab."
"Listen to him," Clara said. "Hasn't seen me in 16 years, and he feels free to criticize." "It's mainly Martin that I want," she continued. "As life goes on, I got less and less use for grown men." Lorena smiled in spite of herself. There was something amusing about the sassy way Clara talked. It was no wonder Gus admired her, for he liked to talk a lot himself. "Let me hold him," she said, reaching for the baby. Augustus was glad to hand the baby over. He had been watching Clara and didn't enjoy having to divert his attention to a wiggly baby. It was the same old Clara, so far as spirit went. Though her body had changed, she was fuller in the bosom, thinner in the face. The real change was in her hands. As a girl, she had had delicate hands with long fingers and tiny wrists. Now it was her hands that drew his eyes. The work she had done had swollen them and strengthened them. They seemed as large at the joints as a man's. She was peeling potatoes with them and handled a knife as deftly as a trapper. Her hands were no longer as beautiful, but they were arresting. The hands of a formidable woman, perhaps too formidable. Though he had only glanced at her hands, Clara picked up the glance, displaying her old habit of being able to read his mind. "That's right, Gus," she said. "I've coarsened a little, but this country will take your bloom."
"It didn't take your bloom," he said,
wanting her to know how glad he was that she was in so many ways her old self, the self he remembered with such pleasure. Claire smiled and paused a minute to tickle the baby. She smiled, too, at Newt, who blushed, not used to ladies' smiles. The girls kept looking at him. "You'll have to pardon us, Miss Wood," she said. "Gus and I were old sweethearts. It's a miracle both of us are still alive, considering the lives we've led. We've got to make up for a lot of lost time, if you'll excuse us." Lorena found she didn't mind, not nearly so much as she had thought she would even a few minutes earlier. It was pleasant to sit in the kitchen and hold the baby. Even hearing Clara josh with Gus was pleasant.
"So what happened to Mr. Johnson's wife once she left?" Augustus asked.
"She was looking for an old boyfriend," Clara said. "He was a killer who got hung while she was recovering from having the baby. July went and saw her, but she wouldn't have anything to do with him. She and one of the buffalo hunters traveled on, and the Sioux killed her. You watch close, or they'll get you too," she added.
"I guess no Indian would dare bother you. They know they wouldn't stand a chance."
"We kept some of them alive the last few winters, once the buffalo were gone," Clara said. "Bob gives them old horses. Horse meat's better than nothing." She put a little milk in the baby's bottle and showed Lorena how to feed him. The baby stared up solemnly at Lorena as he drank. "He's taken with you, Miss Wood," Clara said. "He's never seen a blonde, I guess." The baby took a sneezing fit, and Lorena was afraid she had done something wrong, but Clara merely laughed at her anxiety, and the child soon settled down. A little later, while Clara was frying the chicken, Call came up from the lots. He wanted to buy some horses and had found some to his liking, but neither Cholo nor July would make the deal. They had shown him the horses readily enough, but informed him that Clara made all the deals. It seemed irregular to him. Two grown men right there, and yet he was forced to do business with a woman.
I was told you're the horse trader, he said.
Yes, Clara said. I'm the horse trader. You girls finish this chicken, and I'll see what Captain Call's picked out. She looked again at the boy who had blushed when she smiled at him. He was saying something to Sally and didn't notice her look. To her eye, he was the spitting image of Captain Call, built the same way and with the same movements. So why is your name Dobbs? She wondered. On their way to the lots, Call tried to think of something to say, but he was at a loss.
You have a pretty ranch, he said finally. I hope we do as well in Montana.
I just hope you get there alive, Clara said.
You ought to settle around here and wait 5 years. I imagine Montana will be safer by then. It ain't safe now.
We're set on being the first there, Call said.
It can't be no rougher than Texas used to be.
Clara set such a stiff price for her horses that Call was tempted to balk. He felt sure he would have done better with her husband if he had been up and about. There was something uncompromising in Clara's look when she named the prices. It was as if she dared him to bargain. He had bargained over many a horse in his day, but never with a woman. He felt shy. Worse, he felt she didn't like him, though, so far as he could remember, he had never given her any reason to take offense. He studied the situation in silence for several minutes, so long that Clara grew impatient. Newt had followed them, thinking the captain might need him to help with the horses if he bought some. He could see that the captain was mighty put out with the woman. It surprised him that she didn't seem to care. When the captain was put out with the men, they cared, but the woman just stood there, her brown hair blowing, not caring in the least, and not giving an inch. It was shocking. He had never expected to see anyone stand up to the captain, except maybe Mr. Gus.
I'm neglecting my guests, Clara said. There's no telling when I'll get to see Gus McCrae again. You take all the time you want to think it over.
Newt was even more shocked. The captain didn't say a word. It was almost as if the woman had issued him an order. The woman turned, and as she did, she looked at Newt. Before he could drop his eyes, she had caught him looking at her in turn. He felt greatly embarrassed. But to his surprise, Clara smiled again, a friendly smile that vanished when she turned back to the captain.
"Well, it's a stiff price, but they're good horses," Call said, wondering how the men could bring themselves to work for such a testy woman. Then he remembered that the younger man had been the sheriff chasing Jake.
"You come from Arkansas, don't you?" he asked.
"Fort Smith," July said.
"We hung your man for you," Call said. "He fell in with a bad bunch. We caught him up in Kansas."
For a second, July didn't remember what he was talking about. It seemed a life ago that he had left Fort Smith in pursuit of Jake Spoon. He had long since ceased to give the man any thought. The news that he was dead did not affect him.
"I doubt I would have caught him myself," July said. "I had horse trouble up around Dodge."
When Clara got back to the house, she was in high color. The way Call had stood there silently, not even asking a question or making an offer, just waiting for her to come down on the price, struck her as arrogant. The more she thought about it, the less hospitable she felt toward the man. "I can't say that I'm fond of your partner," she said to Augustus. He had talked the girls out of some chicken gizzards and was eating them off a plate.
"He ain't skilled with the ladies," Augustus said,
amused that she was angry. As long as she wasn't angry at him, it just made her the better looking.
"Ma, shall we take buttermilk?" Betsy asked. She and Sally had changed dresses without their mother's permission, and they were so excited by the prospect of a picnic that they could hardly keep still.
"Yes, today we feast," Clara said. "I asked Cholo to hitch the little wagon. One of you go change that baby. He's rather fragrant."
I'll help, Lorena said. It surprised Augustus, but she went off upstairs with the girls. Clara stood listening as their footsteps went up the stairs. Then she turned her deep gray eyes on Augustus.
She's hardly older than my daughters, Clara said.
Don't you be scolding me. It ain't my fault you went off and got married.
If I'd married you, you would have left me for somebody younger and stupider long before now, I imagine, Clara said. To his surprise, she came over and stood near him for a moment, putting one of her large, strong hands on his shoulder.
I like your girl, she said.
What I don't like is that you spent all these years with Woodrow Call. I detest that man, and it rankles that he got so much of you and I got so little. I think I had the better claim. Augustus was taken aback. The anger in her was in her eyes again, this time directed at him. Where have you been for the last 15 years, she asked.
Lonesome Dove, mostly. I wrote you 3 letters.
I got them. And what did you accomplish in all that time?
Drank a lot of whiskey.
Clara nodded and went back to packing the picnic basket. If that's all you accomplished, you could have done it in Ogallala, been a friend to me. I lost 3 boys, Gus. I needed a friend.
You ought to wrote me that, then. I didn't know.
Clara's mouth tightened. I hope I meet a man sometime in my life who can figure such things out. I wrote you, but I tore up the letters. I figured if you didn't come of your own accord, you wouldn't be no good to me anyway.
Well, you was married, he said,
not knowing why he bothered to argue. I was never so married but what I could have managed a friend. I want you to look at Bob before you go. The poor man's laid up there for 2 months, wasting away. The anger had died out of her eyes. She came and sat down in a chair, looking at him in the intent way she had, as if reading his face and the events of the 15 years he had spent away from her. "Where'd you get Miss Wood?" she asked.
"She's been in Lonesome Dove a while."
"Doing what?"
"Doing what she could. But don't you hold it against her," he said.
Clara looked at him coolly. "I don't judge women that harsh," she said. "I might have done the same under some circumstances."
"I doubt it," he said.
"Yes, but you don't know as much about women as you'd like to think you do. You're overrated in that regard."
"By God, you're sassy," Augustus said.
Clara just smiled, her old beguiling smile. "I'm honest," she said. "To most men, that's sassy."
"Well, it might interest you to know that Laurie started this trip with your old friend Jake Spoon. He was his usual careless self and let her get kidnapped by a real rough man."
"Oh, so you rescued her? No wonder she worships you. What happened to Jake?"
"He met a bad end. We hung him.
He was with a gang of murderers." Clara didn't flinch at the news. She heard the girls coming back down the stairs. Lorena was carrying the baby. Clara stood up so Lorena could sit. The baby's eyes followed her. "Betsy, go find July and the men and ask them if they want to wash up before we go."
"I doubt that you can get Woodrow Call to go to your picnic. He'll be wanting to get back to work."
But Call went. He had come back to the house, still trying to think of a way to talk Clara down on the horses, only to find the girls loading a small wagon, Lorena holding a baby, and Gus carrying a crock of buttermilk. "Could you drive for us, Captain?" Clara asked, handing him the reins to the little mule team before he could answer. With such a crowd there watching, he couldn't muster a protest. And he drove the little wagon 3 miles west on the Platte to a place where there were a few small cottonwoods. "It ain't as nice as our place on the Guadalupe, Gus, but it's the best we can do," Clara said.
"Oh, your orchard, you mean," Augustus said.
Clara looked puzzled for a moment.
She had forgotten that that was what they called the picnic spot on the Guadalupe. The day remained fair, and the picnic was a great success for everyone except Captain Call and July Johnson, both of whom felt awkward and merely waited for it to be over. The girls tried to get July to wade in the Platte, but he resisted solemnly. Newt waded, and then Lorena, rolling up her pants, and Lorena and Betsy walked far downstream, out of sight of the party. The baby dozed in the shade while Clara and Augustus bannered. The 16-year-old gap in their communications proved no hindrance at all. Then Augustus rolled up his pants and waited with the girls while Clara and Lorena watched. All the food was consumed, Carl drinking about half the buttermilk himself. He had always loved buttermilk and had not had any for a long time. "You don't plan on returning to Arkansas, Mr. Johnson?" he asked. "I don't know that I will," July said. In fact, he had given no thought to his future at all. Augustus ate most of the fried chicken and marveled at how comfortable Lorena seemed to be. She liked the girls, and seeing her with them reminded him that she was not much more than a girl herself, despite her experiences. He knew that she had been advanced too quickly into life, though perhaps not so far yet to enjoy a bit of her girlhood. When it came time to go back to the ranch, he helped Laurie into the wagon with the girls, and he and Clara walked behind. Newt, who had enjoyed the picnic mightily, fell into conversation with Sally and rode beside the wagon. Lorena didn't seem concerned. She and Betsy had taken to one another at once and were chatting happily. "You should leave that girl here," Clara said, startling Augustus. He had been thinking the same thing.
"I doubt she'd stay."
"If you stay out of it, she might," Clara said. "I'll ask her. You have no business taking a girl like that into Montana. She might not survive."
"In some ways, she ain't so young," he said.
"I like her," Clara said, ignoring him.
"I expect you'll marry her, and I'll have to watch you have 5 or 6 babies in your old age.
I guess I'd be annoyed, but I could live with it.
Don't take her up to Montana. She'll either die or get killed, or else she'll get aged before time like I have."
"I can't tell that you've aged much."
"You've just been around me one day. There are certain things I can still do and certain things I'm finished with."
"What things are you finished with?" he asked.
"You'd find out if you'd stayed around me much."
"I noticed you've taken a fancy to young Mr. Johnson. I expect if I did stay around, he'd beat me out."
"He's nearly as dull as Woodrow Call, but he's nicer. He'll do what he's told, mostly, and I've come to appreciate that quality in a man. I could never count on you to do what you're told."
"So, do you aim to marry him?"
"No, that's one of the things I'm through with. Of course, I ain't quit. Poor Bob ain't dead. But if he passes away, I'm through with it." Clara smiled, and Augustus chuckled.
"I hope you ain't contemplating an irregular situation."
Clara smiled. "What's irregular about having a boarder? Lots of widows take boarders. Anyway, he likes my girls better than he likes me. He might be ready to marry again by the time Sally's of age." At that moment, Sally was chatting away to young Newt, who was getting his first taste of conversation with a sprightly young lady.
"Who's his mother?" Clara asked.
She liked the boy's looks and also his manners. "I never knew Call was prone to ladies," she added.
"Oh, Woodrow ain't. He can barely stand to be within 50 yards of you."
"I know that," Clara said. "He's been stiff all day because I won't bargain away my horses. My price is my price. But that boy is his. And don't you tell me he ain't. They walk alike, they stand alike, and they look alike."
"I expect you're right," Augustus said.
"Yes, I'm right. And you ain't answered my question."
"His mother was a young woman named Maggie. She was a whore. She died when Newt was 6.
I like that boy. I'd keep him, too, if I got the chance. He's about the age my Jimmy would be, if Jimmy had lived.
Newt's a fine boy.
It's a miracle, ain't it? When one grows up nice. He's got a quiet way, that boy. I like that. It's surprising to find gentle behavior when his father is Captain Call.
Oh, Newt don't know Call's his father. I expect he's heard hints, but he don't know it.
And Call don't claim him when anybody can see it, Clara said, shocked. I've never had much opinion of Call, and now I have less.
Call don't like to admit mistakes. It's his way.
What mistake? I wouldn't call it a mistake if I raised a boy that nice. My Jimmy had wildness in him. I couldn't handle him, though he died when he was 8. I expect he'd have ended like Jake. Now, where'd it come from? I ain't wild. And Bob ain't wild.
I don't know, Augusta said.
Well, I had 2 sweet ones, though. My last one, Johnny, was the sweetest. I ain't been the same since that child died. It's a wonder the girls aren't worse behaved than they are. I don't consider that I've ever had the proper feeling for them. It went out of me that winter I lost Jeff and Johnny. They walked in silence for a while. Why don't you tell that boy who his pa is, Clara said.
I'd do it. If he was around here long,
he should know who his pa is. He's got to wonder.
I always thought Carl would work up to it eventually. I still think so.
I don't, Clara said.
A big gray wolf loped up out of the riverbed, looked at them for a moment, loped on. Ahead, the baby was fretting, and the girls and Lorena were trying to shush it.
When they got back to the ranch, Call gave in and told Clara he'd pay her price for the horses. He didn't like it, but he couldn't stay around forever, and her horses were in far better condition than the nags that he had looked at in Ogallala.
Fine. Go help him, boys, Clara said.
Cholo and July went off to help. Newt was helping the girls carry the remains of the picnic in. He was sorry they were leaving. Sally had been telling him all she planned to do when she grew up. She was going east to school and then planned to play the piano professionally, she said. That seemed unusual to Newt. The only musician he knew was Lippy, and he couldn't imagine Sally doing what Lippy did, but he enjoyed listening to her talk about her future life. As he was coming down the steps, Clara stopped him. She put an arm across his shoulder and walked him to his horse. No woman had ever done such a thing with him.
Newt, we've enjoyed having you, Clara said. I want you to know that if Montana don't suit you, you can just head back here. I'll give you all the work you can stand.
I'd like to, Newt said. He meant it. Since meeting the girls and seeing the ranch, he'd begun to wonder why they were taking the herd so far. Seemed to him Nebraska had plenty of room. For most of the trip, Newt had supposed that nothing could be better than being allowed to be a cowboy, but now that they had got to Nebraska, his thinking was changing. Between the buffalo heifer and the other whores in Ogallala and Clara's spirited daughters, he had begun to see that a world with women in it could be even more interesting. The taste he had of that world seemed all too brief. Though he had been more or less scared of Clara all day, and was still a little scared of her, there was something powerfully appealing about her, too.
Thank you for the picnic, he said. I never went on one before.
Something in the boy touched Clara. Boys had always touched her, far more than girls. This one had a lonely look in his eye, although he also had a quick smile.
Come back when you can. We'll go on many more, she said. I believe Sally's taken a fancy to you.
Newt didn't know what to say to that. He got on his horse.
I expect I'd better go help, ma'am.
If you get to choose one of my horses, choose that little sorrel with the star on his forehead, Clara said. He's the best of that bunch.
Oh,
I imagine Dish will get the first pick, Newt said. Dish is our top hand. Well, I don't want Dish to have him, Clara said. I want you to have him. Come on. She started for the lots and made straight for call. Captain, she said. There's a 3-year-old sorrel gelding with a white star on his forehead in this lot you bought. I want to give that horse to Newt, so don't let anyone have him. You can deduct him from the price. Give it to him? Call asked, surprised. Newt, who overheard, was surprised too. The woman who drove such a hard bargain wanted to give him a horse. Yes, I'm making him a gift. I'd feel better knowing that Newt was well-mounted, if you're really going to take him to Montana. With that, she went back to the house. Call looked at the boy. Why'd she do that? He asked. Of course, it was fine for the boy to have the horse. It saved $50. I don't know, Newt said. That's the whole trouble with women, Call said, as if to himself. They do things that don't make sense. She wouldn't give a nickel on the rest of them horses. Most horse traders would have taken off a dollar just to help the deal.
Chapter 88.
After Call and Newt left with the horses, Clara lit a lantern and took Augustus up to the room where her husband lay. Lorena sat at the kitchen table with the girls, playing draughts. July watched, but could not be persuaded to take part in the game. Even Betsy, his favorite, couldn't persuade him, and Betsy could usually get July to do anything she wanted him to do. Lorena's presence made him shy. He enjoyed sitting and looking at her in the lamplight, though. It seemed to him that he had never seen anyone so beautiful. He had only seen her before on that dreadful morning on the plains when he had to bury Roscoe, Joe, and Janie, and had been too stricken to notice her. Then she had been bruised and thin from her treatment by Blue Duck and the Kiowas. Now she was neither bruised nor thin. Clara and Augustus sat for an hour in the room where Bob lay. Augustus found it difficult to get used to the fact that the man's eyes were open. Clara had ceased to care or even notice. "He's been that way for 2 months," she said. "I guess he sees some, but I don't think he hears."
"It reminds me of old Tom Mustard. He rangered with us when we started the troop. His horse went over a cut bank on the Salt Fork of the Brazos one night and fell on him. Broke his back. Tom never moved a muscle after that, but his eyes were open when we found him. We started back to Austin with Tom on a travoy, but he died a week later. He never closed his eyes in all that time that I know of."
"I wish Bob would go," Clara said. "He's no use to himself like this. All Bob liked to do was work, and now he can't." They walked out on the little upper porch, where it was cooler. "Why'd you come up here, Gus?" she asked. "You ain't a cowboy."
"The truth is, I was hoping to find you a widow. I didn't miss by much, either."
Clara was amused that her old beau would be so blunt. "You missed by years," she said. "I'm a bony old woman now, and you're a deceiving man, anyway." "You always were a deceiving man. I think the best thing would be for you to leave me your bride-to-be, and I'll see if I can give her some polish."
"I never meant to get in the position I'm in, to be truthful."
"No, but you like it, now that you're in it," Clara said, taking his hand. "She's got nearly as high an opinion of you as you have of yourself, Gus. I could never match it. I know your character too well. She's younger and prettier, which is always a consideration with you men." Augustus had forgotten how fond she was of goading him. Even with a dying husband in the next room, she was capable of it. The only chance with Clara was to be as bold as she was. He looked at her, and he was thinking of kissing her. Clara saw the look and was startled by it. Although she kissed her girls every day and lavished kisses on the baby, it had been years since she had been kissed by a man. Bob would occasionally kiss her cheek if he had returned from a trip. Otherwise, kissing played no part in his view of married love. Looking off the porch, with Augusta standing near, Clara felt sad. She mainly had snatched kisses from her courtship with Gus or Jake 20 years before, to remember. She looked at Gus again, wondering if he would really be so bold or so foolish. He didn't move to kiss her, but he still stood close and looked into her face. "The older the violin, the sweeter the music," he said with a smile. "That proves you're a deceiving man, if you think that," she said. "You've had a long ride for nothing, I guess." "Why, no," he said. "It's happiness to see you." Clara felt a sudden irritation. "Do you think that you can have us both?" she said. "My husband isn't dead. I haven't seen you in 16 years. I've mostly raised children and horses during those years. 3 of the children died and plenty of the horses. It took all the romance out of me, if romance was what you were hoping for. I read about it in my magazines, but I left it behind for myself when I left Austin." "Don't you regret it?" "Oh, well. Yes and no. I'm too strong for the normal man and too jealous once my feelings get started. I'm surprised you dare bring another woman into my house."
"I thought you liked her," he said.
"I do like her. I mind you doing it, though. Don't you understand the facts of nature yet? She's younger and prettier."
"It happened accidentally, like I mentioned."
"I've never noticed you having such accidents with ugly girls. I don't care how it happened. You've been my dream, Gus. I used to think about you 2 or 3 hours a day."
"I wish you'd wrote, then."
"I didn't want you here," she said. "I needed the dreams. I knew you for a rake and a rambler, but it was sweet to pretend you only loved me."
"I do only love you, Clara. I've grown right fond of Laurie, but it ain't like this feeling I have for you."
"Well, she loves you," Clara said. "It would destroy her if I was to have you. Don't you know that?"
"Yes, I know that," Augusta said, thinking there would never again be such a woman as the one who looked at him with anger in her face.
"Would you destroy her, then, if I said stay?"
"I expect so."
"That ain't an answer."
"Yes, you know I would," he said. "I'd smother Bob for you and send Laurie to perdition."
Clara sighed, and her anger wore out with a sigh. "Such talk," she said. "Bob'll die when he can manage it, and I'll see what I can do for your bride. It's just her beauty that set me off. I was always the youngest and the prettiest, and now I'm not."
"You're mighty pretty, and anyway, pretty ain't everything," he said.
"Where men like you are concerned, it's 99%. You ain't had time to look at me close. I ain't the prettiest anymore. The prettiest is downstairs."
"I'd still like a kiss."
A tickle of amusement took her. He saw her smile and took it for encouragement. When he bent forward, the result was so bland that after a moment, Clara drew back her head and laughed. "You've ridden a long way for some pretty weak courting," she said. But she felt better. Gus looked rather hangdog at his failure. One of the few times she had ever seen him look that way.
"You beat any woman I ever saw for taking the starch out of a man," he said, a little perplexed.
Despite all the complications, he felt his old love for her returning with its old power. So much feeling flooded him, just looking at her, that he felt shaky. It was a puzzle to him that such a thing could happen, for it was true she had become rather bony and her face had thinned too much. And certainly she was as taxing as a woman could be, and yet the feeling made him shaky. "You think I'm rough, Gus?" she asked with a smile.
"I ain't been scorched by lightning, but I doubt it could be hotter than being scorched by you."
"Still think you'd have been up to being married to me?"
"I don't know," he said truthfully.
Clara laughed and took his arm to lead him downstairs.
"What about the young sheriff?" he asked, stopping her.
He was unwilling to end their privacy so soon. What sheriff?
Why, July Johnson. It seems you've adopted him.
I mainly wanted the baby, but I guess it's only fair to keep the father, too.
Keep him and do what with him?
What do you care? You're engaged. You can ride all over the country with a pretty girl. I guess I can be allowed a man. I'd forgotten how jealous you were. You were jealous of Jake, and I did little more than flirt with Jake.
Hear him talk, you did.
Neither of us will hear him talk again, and I won't marry again.
What makes you so sure?
I don't have enough respect for men, she said. I've found very few who are honest, and you ain't one of the few.
I'm about half honest.
That's right, she said, and led him downstairs. To his surprise, Clara simply walked into the kitchen and invited Lorena to stay with them while the herd went on to Montana. We could use your help, and you'd be more than welcome, she said. Montana's no place for a lady. Lorena blushed when she said it. No one had ever applied the word lady to her before. She knew she didn't deserve it. She wasn't a lady like Clara. She had never even met a lady like Clara, and in the space of a day had come to admire her more than she had ever admired anyone excepting Gus. Clara had shown her nothing but courtesy and had made her welcome in her house, whereas other respectable women had always shunned her because of the way she lived. Sitting in the kitchen with the girls and the baby, Lorena felt happy in a way that was new to her, yet stirred in her distant memories of the days she had spent in her grandmother's house in Mobile when she was four. Her grandmother's house had been like Clara's. She had gone there only once that she could remember. Her grandmother had put her in a soft bed, the softest she had ever slept in, and sung songs to her while she went to sleep. It was her happiest memory, one she treasured so, that in her years of traveling she grew almost afraid to remember it. Some day she might try to remember it and find it gone. She was very afraid of losing her one good, warm memory. If she lost that, she felt she might be too sad to go on. But in Clara's house, she wasn't afraid to remember her grandmother and the softness of the bed. Clara's house was the kind of house she thought she might live in some day. At least she had hoped to when she was little. But when her parents sickened and died, she lost hope of living in such a house. Mosby's home had been nothing like it. And then she had started living in hotels or little rooms. She slowly stopped thinking of nice houses and the things that went with them, such as little girls and babies. So when Clara came downstairs and asked her to stay, it felt like being given back something, something that had been lost so long that she had ceased to think about it. Just before Clara and Gus came in, the girls had been nagging her to teach them how to sew. Lorena could sew fairly well. The girls complained that their mother never took the time to teach them. Their mother, about whom they were full of gripes, was more interested in horses than in sewing. The girls were not at all surprised when Clara asked Lorena to stay. "Oh, do," Sally said. "We could learn to sew if you would." "We could sew new dresses. We never get any," Betsy said. Lorena looked at Gus. He seemed flustered, and he seldom was flustered. She thought he might be bothered by the thought of her staying. "Would you come back, Gus?" she asked. It seemed all right to ask him in front of Clara and the girls. Clara, after issuing the invitation, had started making coffee. Augusta saw that she wanted to stay. If asked that morning if such a thing could occur, he would have said it was impossible. Lorena had clung to him since the rescue, but being at Clara's, even for so short a space, had changed her. She had refused to go to Ogallala and was frightened of the thought of going into a store, but she wasn't frightened of Clara.
"I sure will come back," he said, smiling. "A ladies' man like me could hardly be expected to resist such a passel of ladies."
"Good. That's settled. But I warn you, Lori, these girls will wear you down," Clara said. "You may wish you were back in a cow camp before it's all over. I'm going to turn them over to you, you know.
All they want to do is quarrel with me, and I'm tired of it. You can argue with them, and I'll break the horses.
After the coffee, Clara made the girls go to bed and tactfully went up herself, so Augustus and Lorena could have a moment alone. She saw that Augustus was a little shocked that she had so easily persuaded the girl away from his side. Lorena felt embarrassed. She had not expected to be asked to stay, or to want to. And yet both things had happened. She was afraid at first that Gus might have his feelings hurt. She looked at him a little fearfully, hard put to explain the strange desire she had to stay at Clara's. Only that morning she had been resolved to stay with Gus at all costs.
"I'll go if you want, Gus," she said. "But it's so nice here, and they're friendly."
"I'm happy for you to stay. You'll be a help to Clara. You'll enjoy those girls. You've spent time enough in that dirty tent of Wilbarger's. Winter's said to be hard in Montana, too."
"I didn't think I'd want to stay," Lorena admitted. "I never thought about it until she asked. Don't you still want to marry her, Gus?"
"No," Augustus lied.
"I don't know why you wouldn't," she said. Now that she knew Clara a little, it seemed perfectly natural that Gus would want to marry her.
"Well, time's changed us," he said,
feeling very uneasy in the conversation. Lorena was looking at him solemnly. He had had women look at him solemnly before, and it always made him uncomfortable. It meant they were primed to detect any lies.
"I don't think nobody could change you, Gus. Maybe you'll want to marry her when you come back."
"Why, I'll be coming back to you, Lori. Of course, by then you might change, too. You might not want me."
"Why wouldn't I?"
"Because you'll have discovered that there's more to the world than me," he said. "You'll find that there are others that treat you decent."
What he said caused Lorena to feel confused. Since the rescue, life had been simple. It had been just Gus. With him gone, it might change. And when he came back, it might have changed so much that it would never be simple again. Yet when it had been simple, she had always worried that Gus didn't want it. Maybe he was just being kind. She didn't know. Didn't know what things meant or didn't mean. She had never expected to find, in the whole world, a place where someone would ask her to stay. Even in her dreams of San Francisco, no one had ever asked her to stay. She had seldom even spoken to a woman in her years in Lonesome Dove, and had no expectation that one would speak to her. The fact that Clara had volunteered made everything seem different.
"Can you wait until the morning to leave?" she asked.
"No, I'm going as soon as I can saddle up. It takes willpower to leave a house full of ladies just to ride along with some scraggly cowhands. I better do it now, if I'm going to."
Clara came downstairs to see him off. She held the baby, who was colicky and wakeful. They went outside with Augustus, Lorena feeling trembly, not sure of what she was doing. Cholo was going with him to Ogallala to bring back all the clothes he had bought her. Clara devoted 5 minutes to trying to persuade him to settle somewhere on the Platte. "There's cheap land not 3 days' ride from here," she pointed out. "You could have the whole north part of the state if you wanted it. Why go to Montana?"
"Well, that's where we started for. Me and Carl have always liked to get where we started for, even if it don't make a damn bit of sense."
"It don't. And I wish I knew of some way to divorce you from that man," Clara said. "He ain't worth it, Gus. Besides, the Montana Indians can outfight you."
"You bought these here Indians off with horses. Maybe we can buy those in Montana off with beef."
"It bothers me," Clara said. "You ain't a cattleman.
Why do you want to be so stubborn? You come far enough. You could settle around here and be of some use to me and Lori." It amused Augustus that his Lori had been adopted as an ally by his old love. The old love and the new stood by his horse's head, neither of them looking quite calm. Clara, in fact, was getting angry. Lorena looked sad.
He hugged them both and gave them each a kiss.
"We've heard that Montana's the last place that ain't been settled," Augusta said. "I'd like to see one more place that ain't settled before I get decrepit and have to take up the rocking chair."